Hello, everybody. Welcome to the American Herbalist Guild Professional Herbalist Webinar Series. This is Patricia Carizzi Howell speaking, and tonight I am going to be co-leading this webinar on the mentorship program of the American Herbalist Guild. What we are hoping to share with you all tonight, and the we that I speak of, includes Richard Mandelbaum and Ben Zappin, who will say hello here in just a minute. We want to share with you some of the details about this program because we've been working in the last couple of years to create something that we hope will act as a bridge between those of you who are spending large amounts of time and money on either self-study or enrolled in a formal herbal studies program, and perhaps you're getting to the end of that training or you've completed some training some years ago and you are beginning to work as an herbal practitioner on whatever level that might be, whether you're just working with friends and family, you already have some sort of medical practice and you're incorporating herbs into what you're doing, or you're actually hanging out a shingle and you're beginning to work as a clinical herbalist with a practice. There is a point when all of that begins where you can sometimes feel kind of like you're on a tight wire and that all of the confidence that you had when you were a student starts to drain away and you wish that you could conjure up one of your teachers or someone else to help remind you of what you were so sure of in your herbal studies. And so what we're hoping to do with the mentorship program that the Guild is sponsoring is to really create some sort of support and bridge for those of you who are moving between student practitioners, is the term I think of, or mentees, by getting a group of professional herbalists who have some years of clinical practice under their belt, who are willing to work one-to-one with you and help you answer some of the questions and navigate your way some of the issues that come up for everyone when they first begin practicing clinical herbalism. So that's what our goal is tonight. We know from the registration information that there are quite a few of you who are looking for mentors or would welcome that kind of support. There are some of you who are just curious about this whole thing, and then we're also being joined by some of our professional members who have clinical practices and who are wanting to get more information about how they might be effective mentors for our herb community. So that's what we're going to be sharing tonight. Before we go into the step-by-step stuff, and Ben, if you want to go ahead and advance the slide, we're going to kind of introduce ourselves. I'll introduce myself since my picture is first. I live in North Georgia, and I've been a professional member of the Guild since the mid-90s, and I'm now on the Governing Council. I've been mentoring people for about 7 years, and one of the things that motivated me to get involved with the AHG project of creating this program was that I was very well mentored by Althea Northage Orr, who's a practitioner in Chicago for many years, and I don't think I really could have made that transition myself without someone who had years of experience that I could call and talk to about everything from the herbs that I was recommending as well as some of the interpersonal issues that came up with clients as I learned how to set professional boundaries and understand how to work with a referral network and things like that. So now, you know, being a little further along in the path of being a clinical herbalist, I would like to see more of that available to people who were in the same position I was, who may have not had the good fortune of just sort of stumbling on someone like I did when I first met Althea Northage Orr. So that's sort of what makes me passionate about this topic. And I would want to interject one other thing before I do the introductions. We are going to allow about 15 or possibly even 20 minutes for question and answer at the end. And at any time, you have a little box on your screen where it says type message here under the chat option. And you can just go ahead and type in a question, and then we'll be collecting those questions. And when we complete the formal part of the webinar, we'll answer those questions and spend some time making sure everyone understands what we're talking about. So first I want to introduce you to Richard Mandelbaum. Rich?
Yeah. Hi, good evening, everybody. And just to complement what Patricia said, I think this is an incredibly important topic. Unlike Patricia, for myself, I actually did not have the good fortune of going through a mentorship. I did study with some phenomenal herbalists, which I still feel was the absolute best path I could have taken, including David Winston, William Lesaffier, and others. But I did myself feel when it was time to hang my shingle, so to speak, that I could have used a bit more clinical supervision. And I think there are a lot of folks in that situation. And for me, the way that I initiated being a mentor was really from a student-driven perspective. I had a student approach me. This was a young woman who had studied with Michael Moore, who is originally from Pennsylvania, which is closer to my neck of the woods, and with a fairly equivalent flora and so on that I'm used to. And she had studied down there but came back east and realized she didn't know any of her own plants and approached me to want to study those. And I just jumped in with a botany-oriented mentorship with her, but then as time went on, realized what the AHG was offering in terms of the handbook, which we'll get into this evening, and the mentorship program. And it has since, over the years, become a real part of what I do as an herbalist. I think probably all of you are familiar with the fact that many herbalists, at least, we kind of cobble together different things we do, whether it's seeing clients, teaching classes, and for me, in addition to both of those, mentoring has become an integral part of what I do as an herbalist, and really one of the most fulfilling aspects of it. And so I'm very happy to talk to you all tonight.
And then Ben Zappin, who joins us from the Bay Area in California. Ben?
Hey there. Thanks, Patricia and Richard. I'm excited to participate in this because I've had the good fortune from right out of the gates in my herbal studies being kind of whisked into a couple different mentorships that lasted, structured 4 or 5 years doing medicine making and wildcrafting with Thomas Avery Guerin, and then a 4-year clinical apprenticeship with Michael Tierra. And so the really the crux of all my vocations and all of these I still express today, 20 years later, are derived from mentorship experiences. So it's one of the biggest gifts I've had in my life, and I feel like it's essential to replicate that and create conduits and opportunities for other people to practice. Continued mentoring. I've mentored quite a few students who studied with the Tierra's East-West Correspondence course, which you can imagine the limitations of correspondence study. A lot of people are remote, not living in urban or rural areas where there is access to more brick-and-mortar herbal education or direct mentors. So there's some predictable things that people struggle with. And as I've come to see people coming out of different herbal programs, people coming out of herbal programs struggle with some of the same things. Finally, I'm really grateful that I still have mentors and still have people to look up to who have been in this profession for 20 years longer than I have, and call upon them frequently. So similarly, I feel like it's a responsibility to perpetuate this and create more opportunities. That's all.
Thanks, Ben. Okay, if you want to go to the next slide now, I want to talk just a little bit about just kind of the history of mentorship just in general and as it pertains to the AHG. For many years, there was a document that was available to our members that had information about how to set up a mentorship and some general guidelines. A few years ago, I worked with several of our members and we expanded that and revised it. And we'll talk a lot about that document because it's kind of the core of the program. But in general, mentoring really is something that has been done between herbalists forever. Many people, especially who were trained in a folk tradition, learned through just watching, asking questions, the oral tradition, and by creating a relationship with someone who acted as a teacher or a guide in their ability to work with plants. And I think that just from the three of us, and if we talk to other people, and probably some of you too, it's key to instilling confidence and making you feel that you do know what you need to do to help other people. And it's really a tradition that has to do with learning by doing. So when we move into the mentorship phase of our work as herbalists, it's where we're actually giving someone herbs and we're recording what happens in response. And it can be kind of terrifying, and it can also be amazingly thrilling and magical. So the mentorship is, as I said before, is a bridge between those two things. In the next slide, you'll see that there's a lot of benefits. Ben, if you can forward it to the next slide, please. That is critical for us, and one of the things we'll talk about tonight is that a good mentor and a good mentee-mentor relationship not only includes support and guidance, but also critical feedback. So we've got some ideas for how both mentors and mentees might also do that. And despite the fact that it sometimes looks at first like the mentees get all of the benefits, as you can hear from our introductions, it's incredibly satisfying to work with someone and see them sort of empower themselves and begin to have confidence in their ability to work with their clients or patients and to deepen their relationship with the plants in a very practical way. So I would say that for most of the people that I have talked to over the years of working in the mentorship aspect of AHG is that most of the people acting as mentors just felt it was phenomenally satisfying. And in fact, one of the biggest complaints that we've had from the people who have had their names listed on the mentor resources directory on the website is that not that many people are contacting them. So part of our goal here tonight, too, is to encourage all of you who are interested in being mentored to reach out to some of the people that we're going to tell you about tonight. We also see mentorship as something that really enhances the road to becoming a professional member. One of our goals as the governing council this next year is going to be to really increase our support of practitioners who want to become professional members. So I do just sort of want to go through the nuts and bolts a little bit of that. The criteria for applying for professional membership is that you have 4 years of training that combines academic and clinical experience. And so that clinical experience is defined as a minimum of 2 years, and that could be work that you're doing on your own in the context of a formal mentorship, or in some cases people are in training herb programs that actually provide clinical supervision, or it can be just a little bit of each. But the sort of the magic number that the admissions committee is looking for is that you've seen at least 100 different clients in a 2-year period. And so that's where when you start a mentorship, you really have to start really doing a lot of outreach and trying to get your practice cranked up. In the next slide, you'll see Ben, if you can change that for me, that you don't have to have a mentor before you apply for professional membership. It's not required. A lot of people who just do independent work, independent study, have applied for and been accepted as professional members. But as we said, that having a supportive mentor can be really invaluable. And you do have to provide a certain amount of documentation and some case studies that back up your claims that you have seen a certain amount of clients in a two-year period. So when you submit that material, this is going to really help. If you have a mentor who can give you a letter of recommendation and also verify that you have done the clinical work. The way that's computed is that for each client you see, you're going to receive 4 hours of credit towards the clinical training requirements. So that involves all aspects of seeing a client from the first time you meet, from the maybe hours and hours you do researching and preparing your recommendations, sharing them with your client, any kind of mentoring that you do with your mentor, and then follow-up appointments. So that's the math behind how you would keep track of that. And in your application, if you do have a mentor, you're going to want to have a letter from that person, and you're going to also want to be able to document in some way how much clinical training you've had, and provide 3 case histories with all of those assessments and treatments and outcomes that you've used. This sort of leads us to the other really big piece of support that AHG can offer you on that path. And in this next slide, you'll see that it is what we're referring to as the Handbook of Mentoring Guidelines. So this is a 67-page PDF download that if you're an AHG member, you can hang up right now and go to the AHG website and download a free copy. Or if you're not a member of the AHG, you can also get a copy, but we do charge for that. And in this, you're going to find information on how to structure a mentorship, all sorts of things about setting fees, writing contracts. And on this next slide, you're going to see something that I think is probably one of the most beneficial aspects, which is the forms and templates that you can get on the website. And these are things that this first slide shows you the things that you would need to set up your mentorship in general, how you would maybe approach a mentor with an application, how you can draw up a contract. We also suggest that people do evaluations, that the student practitioner and the mentors and everybody kind of evaluates that. And I think Rich is going to talk in a minute about the importance of setting up formal evaluations. And then, you know, optimistically speaking, a letter of recommendation, and then a final report and sign-off. But the next set of forms and templates on the next slide, Ben, if you can change for me, are things that you might use when you're getting your practice going. So these include a couple of versions of things that most herbalists use in their practice. So disclosure and informed consent forms that you might have your clients see that sort of outline your scope of practice. I've also collected some health history forms from several practitioners so that you can take those and look at them and see how different people collect information and the kinds of forms that they use. And then just some other things that are kind of handy have, like a food diary and lists. You know, some of us find that the more of these kinds of forms we use with our clients, that the more compliant they are in putting all the information together that we need. And all of these forms are Word documents that you could alter. You can put your own name on them. You know, we don't restrict your use in any of those in any way. So once you go into, if you're a member and you go into the members area, you can download these as Word documents, and they're also included in the mentorship handbook. And if you're not a member, those documents would come with your $10 download. So those are some of the formal things, and then Rich is going to talk about as we go along that we do have a resources, a list of people who are interested in being mentors, and if you haven't checked out the new AHG website, I invite you to do that because you'll find a very expanded list of people who are interested in being mentors that you can contact. So let me hand things over to Rich now for him to talk a little bit more about how this would work as on the student level.
Great. Thank you, Patricia. And maybe just very, very briefly, I realize I didn't provide any biographical data, but so I'm an herbalist in New York. As you can see in Brooklyn, I divide my time between Brooklyn and the Southern Catskills. And I've been a professional member since 2003. And on the council for what will be just a year at this year's annual meeting, and I'm definitely gratified to be in a leadership position in the organization and have the opportunity to work with folks like Patricia and Stephen and Ben and many others. So that's enough about me. If we can just dive into the topic at hand, I'm going to be speaking mainly about what's relevant for students seeking out a mentor. But I think actually for those of you who may be participating tonight who are mentors or potential mentors, hopefully you'll find this relevant to you as well. For me, I find myself asking these questions of potential mentees or students. So it's, I think, a good way to frame what are the preliminary topics or preliminary questions we need to be asking ourselves on either side of the aisle there. So the obvious first question is why seek a mentor in the first place? And there are many different reasons, and I think obviously this is an AHG webinar. We're all active in the AHG. At the same time, I think we don't want to make an assumption that necessarily everybody wants to become a professional member of the AHG. We all know, I think, good herbalists who are not, and good for them. At the same time, I think as an organization, we don't have the capacity to be able to vet or recommend mentors that may not be professional members. So I think for those of you who are students seeking out a mentorship, if you have that clear goal, or even if you think you might down the path have the goal of applying for professional membership, it's important that either the simplest path being seeking out a professional member who is listing him or herself as a mentor on our website, or at the very least checking in with AHG if that's not the case, and seeing if that seems like a wise move to make, or if there's any guidance that can be had from that, because you don't want to find yourself in a position down the road where you've studied with someone and not have documented that thoroughly, or perhaps somebody whose approaches are vastly different from the AHG's approach to herbalism, although I would say the AHG's approach is respectful of the diversity that we have, and I'll mention that in a bit going forward as well. I will say as a mentor, certainly there are students that I mentor who do not have the goal of becoming AHG members, professional members necessarily. They may change their minds later on. I think that's true of Patricia and Ben as well, and probably of most mentors. And I think that's fine. I think that can be very valuable and rewarding as well. I would say that many of the best practices as put forth in the AHG Mentorship Handbook are applicable very broadly to students who just want to move from, you know, that student category to a practitioner category. And Patricia, I think, was being a bit modest about her own role. More than anybody, I know there were many people who contributed, but more than anyone, she's really responsible for getting that resource available to folks. And for those of you who have not seen it, I really highly recommend it, and like I'm saying, really represents best practices and template forms and so on that can be used in a wide variety of settings. First and foremost, mentorships, but in by students in other settings, classroom settings, and so on as well. So definitely check that out. Okay, I think we can move on from this slide. So. One of the first things you really want to do, and again, this is as a mentor, if someone kind of contacts me cold, I have found over the years that I keep asking the same question. So I think the more, as somebody seeking out a mentorship, you do some of this homework yourselves beforehand, it's going to help you clarify what kind of mentorship you're seeking, as well as what kind of mentor you're seeking. And it, of course, will help the potential mentor as well in just in terms of saving time and maximizing clarity. There are many different forms a mentorship can take, and identifying why you're seeking a mentorship is really important. And these can take, these can consist of many different priorities, whether that's supervised clinical work with clients and improving, whether it's your traditional or your biomedical assessment and diagnostic skills, whether it's just your personal skills and interpersonal skills, like Patricia mentioned earlier, which is often underrated in its importance until you're sort of out there working underground and you realize how important it is. It might be more seeking guidance for legalities, regulations related to practice, and all of the above, and then certainly the content. So identifying what gaps there may be in your education as a student and what might need to be filled. And of course, it's the mentor's role as well. For instance, on the slide, I mentioned Materia Medica. So I'll have students go through identifying what their working Materia Medica is. Of course, it's my role as mentor to evaluate that independently as well and decide, well, let's double back and fill in some gaps on this, you know, XYZ ERTS, or let's add some to Materia Medica. So that's just one example. One thing I certainly will say is that your goal in seeking a mentor and establishing a mentorship should not be that you want to be a professional member of the AHG. I know that sounds counterintuitive maybe, so I'll explain myself. I think that's fine and very positive, in fact, as a professional goal, as a goal for your career path. And so the mentorship can certainly contribute to that and can be structured in such a way that's going to make sure that it's helping lead you towards that end. But the goal of the mentorship itself should not be attaining professional membership. The goal of the mentorship itself, and I run the risk here of being overly obvious, should be to learn. And what do I, as a student, want to learn from a mentor? And that should really be first and foremost in your minds as you're thinking about this. Okay, so let's move on. So I think we may have skipped a slide there. Can you go back one, Ben? Okay, I think there might be, let's see. Okay, I'm fine. Yep, no, you're good where you are. Thank you. So a couple of fundamental questions to ask yourself are, number one, what's your budget? What can you afford? And in an ideal world, we wouldn't structure our learning relationships based on that. I'd be the first to say that shouldn't be the priority, or should be at least just handled in as practical a way as it can be, and we all do what we can to support each other. But at the same time, to be realistic, that's often what helps define and structure what the mentorship will be, and also what time, equally important, or maybe more so, what time you can devote to the mentorship. And that might be how many clients you think you'll be seeing per month and how much time per client you'll be spending, how much time do you have to realistically write up case histories to share with your mentor, how much extra study time do you really have in your busy life. And these are all things that it's important for you to think about, in my opinion, before you approach a mentor, so that you can realistically assess if you're going to be able to meet your goals working with that person. And I would say, as a bit of advice, be conservative in your estimates. So if you've got a bit of a range in your budget, a bit of a range in terms of how much time you think you're going to devote, oh, I can devote 1 hour a week, or maybe I can devote up to 6 hours a week, you know, structure that mentorship or think about that at least going in these initial stages on that low end, and then that can be increased over time. Versus having to deal with a situation where you might have to go back and restructure something because you didn't have the time that you thought you would. Okay, let's move on here. Thank you. So one thing you want to do, in my opinion, that is tremendously helpful, and I do ask people who approach me about a mentorship, is to do a self-assessment. One thing you can do is look at those guidelines for professional membership that Patricia mentioned earlier, and those, of course, are spelled out in more detail on the AHG site and in the documents and materials available on the site, and assess where you stand as relates to those guidelines. And I will stress the fact that they're guidelines. That's something I hear everyone involved in the AHG repeating fairly frequently, but it bears repeating. There are no strict requirements for AHG professional membership, but there are guidelines, and so the more you deviate from those guidelines, the more that you'll have to explain that. But that's an important thing to keep in mind, that context matters and circumstances are certainly taken into account. But you want to take a look at those guidelines and see how many hours have you spent on anatomy and physiology, how many herbs are in your materia medica, and document that, and document the educational hours you've had in each of those topics, and just see where you stand, and that's going to help identify some of the focuses that the mentorship should take as you go on. And that's going to help you when time comes, if you do, in fact, apply for professional membership as well, because it's going to be organized information and structure. Okay, we can move to the next. So then you want to see about finding a mentor. And in this in particular, I would say, a couple of things. One is that within the mentorship handbook that we've been referring to, there is an application template. Some mentors might request or require an official or formal application, but they're certainly asking the right questions. So you definitely want to pay attention to that as well and take a look at that. But you want to ask some key questions before you even start to look. And I would give strong advice to not just approach a mentor and ask if he or she is willing to be your mentor based on the most convenient factors, whether it's geography or availability or cost or whatever that might be. I think that all of us probably who are participating tonight equally know and honor and respect the tremendous diversity in herbal medicine. It's something that we really need to nurture and support and feel strongly about. And so given that, the pros and cons, it does mean that not every herbalist who, even somebody well-established, somebody who's an amazing, incredible practitioner, really knows what she's doing or he's doing, it doesn't mean they're going to be the right match for you. And it really is important, in my opinion, to pay close attention not only to the more obvious aspects like the traditions and frameworks, theoretical frameworks the person works under, whether that's traditional Chinese herbal medicine or Ayurveda or Western biomedical approaches or whatever that might be. But beyond that, I really encourage and strongly recommend that before you even approach a mentor, you check out videos online, you go to workshops if you can, you download and listen to MP3s, and you really find somebody who seems to really speak to you. You don't want to stay in your comfort zone, so that's the downside that you want to be aware of. You want to go outside of that comfort zone enough to really learn in a meaningful way, but you really do need to connect with the person that you're going to be in close contact with, and that's very important. And you can get on that new website, like Patricia mentioned, and take a look at the mentors listed there. So the last couple of slides here, just to wrap up, are about reaching an agreement and a contract. And it really is, in my opinion, essential, even if it's a limited mentorship in terms of the amount of time that's going to go into it, however it's structured and whatever it's structured around, to have a written agreement that's going to provide clarity to everybody involved. And you'll see the word negotiation on the slide here. That sounds a bit formal, but really all that is referring to is a frank and transparent conversation that takes place about what the student or mentee's needs are and reality is, financially, educationally, et cetera, and the mentors. And with that, you can arrive at what's going to really be sustainable and work out well for both parties. So we can go to my last slide here. And there are different ways to reach an agreement. There is a template, again, in the mentorship handbook, so that's a good starting point. Some mentors will have templates that they tend to use already, and that's fine as well. It's certainly within the right of either party to suggest or recommend additions or changes to that language until both feel comfortable, but certainly you can get a good idea of what some recommendations are and best practices are. And referring back to relevant documents, certainly ethical behavior is important, and the AHC has some of that language that can be helpful. And and of course, all of the nuts and bolts of the mentorship that are required or would be recommended for a good working agreement. And then, like Patricia mentioned earlier, for my last point, I'd just like to emphasize the importance of evaluations and really making sure that those are structured and scheduled beforehand. And it is a two-way street. Obviously, the mentor evaluating the mentee is important, but part of this is certainly the student evaluating that mentorship as well. And making sure that he or she is also achieving the goals that they have set for themselves in their career path. And making those periodic, of course, regular feedback is essential. But formalizing that a bit in terms of periodic, more formal evaluations is something that I think is really crucial to making sure that this all works well for both. So with that, I think I'll turn things over to Ben to wrap up. Ben, are you there? You may be on mute.
I muted myself. Thanks, Richard. So, brief biographical piece on me is that I am working as a clinical herbalist and a medicine maker in Oakland, California, and in San Francisco, and am currently, you know, actively mentoring people in various stages of their clinical experience, including right now quite a few in-person mentors in both my practices who are students of both Chinese and Western herbal medicine, and that is the allure that, you know, I'll offer to people who often study Chinese medicine in a academic setting and then are really drawn to their native plants. So I just want to reiterate here how outstanding the mentorship guidelines are. You know, the more I see presentations, I hope you're observing this and agreeing that the work that's been put into these is one of the bright spots, I think, of the organization in general. So what makes a compatible mentor? Some of this is what I'm presenting on here, geared towards potential mentors and oriented to helping you think about what your role is going to be for those of you who may already be mentoring or are being reactivated as mentors. We certainly just made a big drive and are going to continue to aspire to activate more people to serve in a mentorship capacity. This is things for you to critically reflect on, and this first slide here also for potential mentees. So what makes a compatible mentor is in part the ability to authentically provide guidance around the mentee and their educational goals. Richard just went over quite a few of those. So there's some redundancy there. Regional accessibility. This pertains, you know, can pertain to the potential for direct access to the mentee and mentor relationship. You can have person to person. You can imagine that there's going to be a lot of value if people are able to observe your diagnostic experience, if people can observe you as a practitioner directly and see your style with patients. I have found in the situations where that is appropriate for me, I've been able to give a lot more direct feedback. So consider that, both for mentors and mentees. It will be consistently available for case review, possibly on short notice. And so part of these pertain to the ethics of availing yourself as a mentor. You know, do you have time to offer presence and focus to the people that may need to make decisions? I think that part of cultivating oneself as a professional herbalist is the ability to create a therapeutic plan more quickly. Oftentimes you see people in the transitioning phase from student to active professional practitioner have a long degree of lag time, you know, maybe a week, before they really feel like they get to settle in on a treatment plan, therapeutic plan, especially with those. So are you available on short notice to help guide, you know, more pressing decisions? Able to comply with other time commitments over an agreed upon duration. So, you know, this is why I think in the screening process of potential mentees, do you feel like it's a good personality fit? Do your communication styles work? Spend a little time getting to know each other. I think that's why coming to conference and coming with meeting different mentees and mentors and pairing up so you can sit face to face so you can communicate with each other. I think it's equally important that the mentor feels like the mentee is a good fit for them so they don't become a drain of energy as somebody that feels incompatible over time. So it's essential to create a structure for clear, honest, supportive feedback. Is it in your nature as a mentor to really guide and give a little bit of push to the individual? So supportive feedback, but also critical feedback. Not everybody who's a great herbalist has sat in a mentor capacity. So, you know, I'm potentially speaking more to those who think this is some way that they may want to avail themselves. And are you willing and able to take the time to give written evaluations or oral recorded evaluations? As the mentee grows and develops upon, you know, agreed upon intervals. So moving forward, one of the main objectives that I want to cover is that we just sent out a sheet for people to fill out. And if you look at the mentor page on the new website, which I think is gorgeous, and there's some outstanding leaders in our field availing availing themselves to be professional mentors, you can see that they followed a template. So one of the templates that's going to be available there is that's already been sent out via e-blast is geared towards availing yourself as a mentor. So all professional members of HG are interested in acting as mentors are invited to post their bios and other related info on the HG website. There's some obvious marketing publicity boons to participating in this. Directly is available to members and non-members alike. So visit the HG website to download the directory listing the template for mentors. So include a brief biography highlighting the styles of herbalism that you've studied or practice. This emphasizes the value of having you as a mentor. I think that you want to be prepared to, again, say that maybe you're not the best fit for somebody. Maybe somebody's coming up with, a more energetic differential diagnostic skill. And you practice with a very scientific mindset. Probably not a good fit. And they might be magnetized to you for reasons that may be unreasonable for their development. So train yourself to identify that. Describe in this any benefits that studying with you may provide a mentee, such as access to an herbal dispensary, opportunities to spend time in your clinical practice, opportunities for employment. I think there can be well-negotiated opportunities for, loyal exchange that extends far beyond just a student-teacher relationship. Opportunities to work in your practice, are also going to be a form of mentorship and hand-over-hand guidance, which I think are going to greatly accelerate both the professionalism curve and the clinical skill level. Let us know if you'll accept mentors at a distance, via phone, email, Skype, or in person only, or are you open to both? I personally have found that both can work really well. So if you have reluctance about mentoring over a distance, I think that it's worth reconsidering, and I think you could talk to any of us in the mentorship committee about that and how satisfying and some of the logistics logistical hurdles can be overcome. So what are your mentor fees is an important thing to declare, and this is clearly, there's some clear examples of this, hourly, retainer, which accept other forms of energy exchange such as barter or work exchange. Oftentimes, aspiring herbalists have some excellent skills that may exceed their capacity to pay you cash. So consider whether you're open to that. Have you previously mentored practitioners who might be willing to provide you with references? I think for me, a lot of my previous mentees remain really good friends and maintain collegial relationships. Oftentimes they're existing medical practitioners or psychotherapists who, we now have a collegial relationship that, I can reach out to them for advice for. So staying in touch with your previous mentees and seeing, staying in their good graces, so they can support people in identifying whether, you're a good fit and give feedback about the experience of working with you. Are you available for a comprehensive mentorship to guide mentees through the entire mentorship process, which is what we've been discussing through this whole course tonight, or are you more interested in availing yourself to be a specialist? And this is something that's a bit new that we're introducing based on some conversations that we've had in the past month. And we've clearly outlined some of those. I won't discuss them at length, but, do you have a strong suit in Western physical assessment, Western medical lab analysis, functional medicine, differential diagnosis methods from traditional medical systems? I included, some that I'm more familiar with here. I know that there are others. traditional Chinese medicine, Kenpo, Tibetan, Unani, Ayurveda, et cetera, and some of those specific differential diagnostic modalities. You may be so expert in one of these that I'm crystal clear and able to deliver a strong suit mentorship to somebody who's wanting to develop this particular skill set. Just some others. Nutritional medicine, counseling skills, red flags for urgent referral, building an appropriate referral network, legal issues pertinent to the region and scope of practice. So all these are things that you might not feel comfortable or qualified to provide that overarching support network to individuals, but you might be an exceptional guide in one of these. And we really encourage you to avail yourself in some of these smaller subsets of what it takes to be a comprehensive practitioner. There's more dispensing, formulating, herb-drug nutrient interaction, ops management, botany, and any other clinical specialties such as OBGYN, urology, any of the internal medical specialties, et cetera. I think you get the point. I think it's probably a good time to maybe, Patricia, you can reiterate the value of the mentorship handbook. Just chime in here, and then we'll open things up to questions. Patricia?
Okay, thanks, Ben. That was great. Am I back up? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, I think that probably all of you are just, chomping at the bit to have this webinar end so that you can go and look at the mentorship book, because we've talked it up so much like an infomercial. And I do want to say that none of us are getting any kind of a cut for the sales, and we're not profiting from that at all. So this isn't like commission sales or a multi-level marketing thing that's happening. But this is a little description on the screen now of what we provide in terms of technical support, and it's a good place to start. And in addition to the questions that some of you might ask about tonight that we can answer, you're always welcome to, and Ben, if you go to the next slide, send questions to the office, they'll forward them to us. But you're all particularly invited to a party that we're planning, which is the mentorship committee is hosting a meet and greet at the symposium. What we're probably going to do is meet somewhere, do some introductions, and then proceed over to one of the lounges at the River House to informally spend some time together talking about things you want the mentorship committee to know, but also meeting some of the people who are potential mentors and just giving each other support. So that's something that I hope that all of you who are attending symposium will look for that on the schedule. We haven't set an exact time for that yet, but it will be on the schedule. And that URL there that's a little hard to read is just ahgsymposium.com. But we also invite you anytime to go ahead and contact the office with questions after tonight, and those will be forwarded on to Ben, and then one of us will get back to you with an answer. So I think we're ready to go to see if anyone had any questions that they wanted to ask of us. Ben, do you have anything over there?
Yeah, there's a few questions. Hazel Dean asks, do we have an age limit? I'm an older student in my fifth decade, but still really need a mentor to move into this new field. AHG is definitely not ageist, and fifth decade is not that old. So I think that we really encourage you to seek out mentorship. It's never too late to learn.
Or too early. Or too
beautiful skill set. Yeah. And really, do we have an age limit? We're just providing guidelines and structure and support. I don't think this is the type of thing that there's going to be rules and control about. There's definitely not an age limit for joining the AHG or becoming a professional member. This is really about providing structure and support for aspiring herbalists to be able to excel at their craft. So that it's never too late for that or too early. Next question. what could one expect to pay? There are a lot of examples on the website that give a range. And you know, I think Patricia and Richard, do you want to share what you offer?
Sure. Yeah, this is Richard. Briefly. So yeah, I think there is quite a range, and the way I approach mentorships is the same way I approach relationships with clients, which has taken a long time to evolve and probably will continue to evolve, I'm sure. But which is to have a rate, but make it clear to people that that's a starting point for discussion. And every mentor is going to be different. So just personally, I would try my best to never have to turn anyone away for financial reasons. I don't think that has ever happened. But that can limit sometimes or define how the mentorship is structured. But to be more specific, currently what I do is use $50 an hour for a starting point of discussion, and that does differ if it's in-person mentorship, if it's a distance mentorship. But that's sort of a starting point that I use for the discussion to begin.
I think I kind of follow a similar strategy that Rich just outlined. And having interviewed a lot of people who are on the mentorship list in the past few years as we sort of were putting all this material together, I think $50 an hour is about the average, and some a little higher and some lower, depending on people's individual preferences. And I know for me, I also add to that a little bit in that I ask my mentees to commit to 6 months of working with me, because I put a lot of time in, like Rich, identifying their strengths and weaknesses and sort of getting a sense of what their background is as we get going. So I want to make sure that the time I spend doing that is also something that we're going to both benefit from. And I require my mentees, most of mine are at distance, that we have 2 one-hour sessions a month, and that they pay me $100 a month. And if they don't see clients or they don't have anything lined up, that the weight is on them to make the appointment and keep it, because they're paying me either way. And I have found that that's been very motivating to my mentees, because even if we don't talk about a particular case, but we just talk about how upsetting it was for them to hear someone's health history story, that it really brought up issues for them, or they have a client that they find they're really struggling to set boundaries with. So we don't always just do case reviews. Sometimes we're talking about tangential issues that come up in the process of getting a practice going.
I think my guidelines are very similar to both of yours, and for individuals who, one of my favorite things I've had the opportunity to do and continue to do is have people who trade me plants, people who can wild harvest plants in bioregions that I don't live near, that are of value to me in lieu of money. Because I have some people that I mentor who live off the land, fairly, and are aspiring professional herbalists. When money exchange is not easy, that's something I've elected to do. Again, take a look. Everybody's disclosed and declared this on the mentor page of the website, so you can get a range. Of all these documents, what is required by the student to hand in to the AHG at the end of the mentorship? Patricia, you're best qualified to answer that.
Sure. Maybe, Ben, can you zoom back? Is it possible for you to go a little backwards and get back to that list? Because I think that would help my memory this time of day, and let everyone take a look at it. Quite a few of the documents are just things for you to, just in terms of using your practice. So this page that we're looking at right now, if you can go back one page, please. Go back one slide. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. The other way. There. Okay. Probably the one that says here the client data file and the client contact hour log. What we suggest that people do to protect the anonymity of the clients that they're working with is that, and this is in the guidelines, is that you assign each client a case number, and that's what's on any information that you share with your mentor. So you have a data file where you have actually the name, address, phone number, email of the client, and then what their case number is, and that you keep that separate from any materials you share with your mentor. And then also when you are submitting documents with your application, which would involve submitting three case studies, you would do the same thing. You would make sure that you go through your case write-up, and you wouldn't want to say, this man is a lead singer for the Rolling Stones, and he has a lot of issues with sore throats. You don't want to put anything like that in your case reviews. So the client data file is one way to organize that information. And then also your client contact hour log would be something that you could include with your application, or you could just sort of use that to give some figures when you're doing your application. And then if you go reverse one more slide, then I think there's something on that other page that I wanted to show people. Your mentorship contact hours log, so how much time did you spend with your mentor? Again, that having that number when you're doing your application, and you could say, I had 40 hours of mentorship with Ben Zappin. Given Ben's reputation as a practitioner in the organization, that would be a helpful thing to have. And then, of course, this final report and sign-off and letters of recommendation are required when you submit your application. And one thing that David Winston, who's the head of the admissions committee, has told me is that what they regard as a red flag is if you have studied with somebody for several years, but that's not one of the people who give you a letter of recommendation. That would be kind of like, well, why didn't you ask that person for your letter of recommendation? So they're looking for some sort of continuity, and did the person that you did your mentorship with or your training with feel good enough about you to send you a letter of recommendation. So those aren't necessarily things that would keep you from being accepted as a professional member, but they would be something that the admissions committee might question you about. So if you're looking to do the professional member application, but I also just want to echo what Rich said earlier, which is, you might not care at all about that, and you just want to be a good herbalist and you want to benefit from someone else's expertise. So, either approach is fine. So hope that answers that question.
Possibly related, here's a question that is, hello, I'm a naturopathic doctor who's very passionate about herbal medicine. I've encountered strong resistance from herbalists. Just cut off, who were not open to shadowing. Basically an MD who said she's not found people open to shadowing or guidance, and says, what kind of beef do herbalists have with naturopathic doctors? I doubt that there is a blanket concern. You may have just reached out to people who are not open to people shadowing or providing support. So I would keep asking and follow some of the guidelines for finding a mentor that may not be who you thought you were going to get guidance from. I work with a lot of naturopathic doctors. I'm happy to have a conversation with you. and or direct you on to some other herbalists if you want to get in touch with us personally. Other questions? Looking for a school or maybe a load of coursework I can get through that I can actually be okay opening up a practice. Most of the stuff I do is intuitive, using a pendulum and backing it up at the library. Is there anything I can learn or be certified for? Anything else that can come to me and say, you need this, and I would have my ducks in a row to work with someone. I don't like using the word prescribing because I don't do that, but it could be interpreted as prescribing. Anybody? Want to take that one on?
Ben, I guess I'm not sure entirely if you could maybe reframe the question. Is it more about the legalities or the practicalities of practice?
I think that's what the answer is going to be. It's somebody who uses a pendulum and it sounds like divines or intuits what somebody needs and makes recommendations based on that and is looking for guidance on course. My read on that is that coming to the conference or looking at there's a lot of correspondence and or brick and mortar schools you could attend, and that's not exactly the focus of this session tonight. So there is a list on the AHG website that might better address that and give you a menu of schools to explore and contact people about. That's what I'm going to refer you to. Can student members download the handbook for free? Patricia?
Yes. Any members, student member, general member, professional members, school members, and institutional members, which are all of our categories, can just log into the members only section of the website. And if you have never done that before, there's instructions for how to get a password and to get access. And that's also the part of the website where you find the amazing resource of all the back issues of the AHG journal and the recordings from about 8 years worth of symposia. So if you haven't, you know, climbed all the way into the back of the website, that's where you're going to go to find the guidelines, handbook of mentoring guidelines. We've been discussing these editable forms and templates, plus all of this amazing recorded information about that's been presented at past symposium and the journals, plus the directory of schools, which actually I think that's available to everybody, but there's a downloadable version. I'm not really sure about that, but the directory is definitely part of what the website includes.
Chantal Cabrera, who is one of our mentors, chimed in and said she's an herbalist that teaches herbal medicine to MD students and loves to take on mentees.
There you go. And Ben, let me just say something, because this is some information that I got from Chantal last year when we were doing a survey of the people who were listed on the website, is that I asked them how many people have contacted you from the AHG website, given that you're listed up there and you're really interested in being a mentor, and quite a few of the people said one or none. So, this is something that I'm encouraging all of you who are looking for mentors to really peruse that list, and you know, you may have heard of some of these people, and they might seem a little intimidating, but the sincerity to offer this service of being a mentor, which Chantal has been on that list for a long time, is definitely something that I hope that you all reach out to these potential mentors and take advantage of this incredible opportunity. And we've all been in the place that some of you find yourself in now of saying, oh, I don't know that much. Am I ready to do this? And a good mentor is going to help you acknowledge what you do know and gain confidence about what your skill level is. And then, as we've said, give you ideas about where you might want to backtrack and fill in some gaps in what you know. So it's a really supportive, wonderful process that I hope you'll all like immediately start badgering these mentors, and so that they're sending me emails and saying, too much, stop, stop.
I want to quickly reiterate that there is going to be the party get-together that Patricia mentioned. And you know, if you have any inkling that this is something you're interested in, coming and taking the time to meet with different potential mentors is really an exceptional gift that AHG is offering. There are no more questions pertinent to our discussion tonight. So does anybody have any closing thoughts or remarks? Richard?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, just maybe to reiterate something I said earlier, I just find this to be one of the most fulfilling things we can be doing. We're really, to maybe go a little bit big picture for a moment to say goodnight, we're really seeing this amazing resurgence right now and strengthening of herbal medicine. And this kind of one-on-one mentorship, I feel, is really crucial to helping people become good practitioners, to helping those of us who are already practitioners make sure we know what we're talking about and we know what we're doing, and we learn equally, I would say, at least speaking for myself, as the folks we mentor. And it's gratifying, and I just appreciate the opportunity to be with you all tonight.
Well, this is Patricia. I'd like to thank Stephen Horn, who organizes these webinars for AHG as a volunteer, for doing all the technical work that goes on behind the scenes. And to Ben and Rich, we've had a good time, I think, getting ready to do this presentation to all of you. And I guess the thing that I would like to leave everyone with is that I hope that you will all step up and take your place in the tradition of the work of being an herbalist who's helping your community as a practitioner. I live in a rural area in Georgia, and the need for more and more competent herbalists to offer alternatives to conventional medicine is, you know, even with all of us that find that herbalism is so much more prevalent now than it was 25 or so years ago, the demand is still incredible. The need for accurate information about herbal alternatives to pharmaceuticals, everyday healthcare using herbs, complementary things that people can do when they're undergoing things like chemotherapy or radiation. We really need more of you all to step up and help out with this huge need. You know, forget Obamacare. Let's just talk about herbal care and get the word out to everybody about how they can bring herbs into their lives and improve their health. So I'm rooting for all of you and hoping that you have the courage to jump on that bridge that we're trying to hold out to you all to join us in doing this important work. Good night to everybody from me.
Yeah, thank you all.